start of it. How to Buy Salt Spring Island Real Estate by Scott Simmons on Salt Spring. Salt Spring Agent for 1% Realty of Vancouver Island. Good afternoon or hello, wherever you are, hello. So how to buy real estate on Salt Spring Island. Usually people buy real estate, they buy by neighborhoods. You know, most cities were laid out as big tracts. It's called tract construction, where a developer goes in, buys a big tract of land, and they'll put up 2,000 homes or 1,000 homes, and they're all within one price range. And so real estate is very, in most places, is very neighborhood dependent. And you go into the neighborhood, and every house will be at a certain price range, and you just pick out a model you like on a street you like. Depending on the state of the house, the prices are all within maybe $20,000 to $50,000 of every other house. But on Salt Spring Island, it's not like that. It's rural real estate. Now, rural real estate is different than city real estate. The fact that there's no two properties that are basically the same. So this represents a different type of problem for most real estate shoppers. Most people moving here have not owned rural real estate before. They're moving here from the city. So the first part, obviously, when you go to buy a house or move here is finance. Now, I'm assuming if you're listening to this tape or this audio clip, that you've already talked to your mortgage broker, you're pre-approved, or you have cash on hand to buy the place, or you've sold your house and you have cash on hand to buy the place. So I'm not going to talk about financing or raising funds or anything like that on this audio clip. I have audio clips with mortgage brokers that you can listen to on my website. There's quite a bit of information about talking to a mortgage broker. That's not the intent of this clip. So we're assuming that you have the cash in hand to buy. So now the thing is, you have to realize that you have to buy a house in the price range that you can afford. And this is the part where it's very personal. Everybody wants something else. No two shoppers want the same thing. Real estate is not like... You know, it seems like the automotive industry, almost everybody drives a gray box nowadays. In real estate, there's, especially on Salt Spring, right now we're sitting at about 350 listings, and there's such a wide variety that one of the easiest ways to narrow down the variety is obviously price. Price is a big factor. So if we use price as the, we'll call it the range that you're going to shop in. And so each person has to develop a range that they think they can afford. Another, you're going to pay cash or you're financing it or you're comfortable floating a mortgage and making the payments. So you know your price range. And let's just assume for argument's sake on this tape, it's between, most people have a range between about $100,000. Let's say it's between $500,000 and $600,000. So what I would recommend if you're looking at houses between $500,000 and $600,000 is to look at houses from $450,000 up to maybe $675,000 or $680,000 range. So you take the whole swath, you go a little bit above and a little bit below the range that you're looking at. And then you look at the houses in those ranges. Now you can look at those houses on the MLS.ca site, which works very well. I have it embedded on my new website, I have it embedded on my old website. And it's the best portal there is in almost the world for real estate. I think Canada is the only spot where we have all the real estate on one massive site. It's really an incredible system. In the US, the MLSs are all broken up, they're all fragmented, so we actually have a superior system here because it's all on one massive site. Now, if you're shopping on the MLS and you've got your ranges, now you have to figure out what's important to you? What do you want? What do you want your house to do? Or your home or your farm? What is it that you really want to get out of your lifestyle? And this is, again, a personal choice. So now we know the price range that you're going to be at. So let's say we're going to look from 680 down to 450. And somewhere in there we're going to find a home. But you have to decide what kind of home do you want? And this comes back to how many people are in your group. Is it a husband and wife? Is it two guys? Is it two ladies? I mean, is it, are you single, one person? I mean, do you have a family? Is it extended family? Do you have a huge family? I mean, do you have kids that never leave home? I mean, this is something, and this determines usually the size of the house that you need to have. And then you have to, once you figure out kind of the size of the actual house, if we look at the stats, which we're not looking at right now, which we'll look at later, the average size house on Salt Spring that's sold, it's around 1,800 square feet. So let's say you're going to look for an average size home at 1,800 square feet. And then you have to decide, okay, you know, what do you want? Two bedroom, three bedroom. So then you kind of narrow that down. We need to have minimum two bedroom, 1,800 square foot home. And then you have to decide about the land. You know, do you want a big lot? What does a big lot really do? Is it really important to have 15 plus acres? You know, I've lived on Salt Spring for over a decade, and I've been to probably 1,000 houses on Salt Spring Island. And most people use about an eighth of an acre around their house. Even if they have, I've been to some properties that are over 100 acres, and, you know, they tend to use a little bit of land around the house. Maybe they'll have an outbuilding or two, and they'll use a little bit of land around those two outbuildings, and that's it. Most people, unless you're going to be a serious farmer or do some permaculture or, you know, grow a forest or manage a woodlot, do you really need to have this massive tract of land? The only real reason why people like 2 to 5 acre lots is it gives you a privacy buffer, which is really nice to have. Now, the thing is, not all 5 acre lots are the same, and not all of them offer the same amount of privacy. If you're looking at one that's maybe, some of them, you know, it's the way the developers develop them. Some of them are really long and skinny so that the developer can put in a short road and have the lowest cost. So you get this really long, narrow lot. And you'll find that the building site, the best building site, will be on some kind of ridge. And guess what? The neighbor is right on that ridge, and the other neighbor's on that ridge, and the other neighbor. So all the houses over time will be built along the same ridge. Even though it's 5 acres, it's almost as if you have no privacy. So there's pros and cons to having a big lot. I mean, to me, it's not necessarily the size of the lot that would be the most important factor. I would want to have a lot that faces south or gets a lot of sun. To me, that would be my number one requirement. But everybody, again, is different. Now, the reason that I want to talk about the sunshine is because here it is. What are we? January 3rd today, 2012. It's hard to believe. We're taping this at the CFSI studio live, going over the air on 107.9 FM, and it's January 3rd. And it's a gray day, and the thing about January days is they're very short. By 4:30, 5 o'clock tonight, it's going to be dark. So during the sunlight hours, between, let's say, 8 o'clock in the morning and 4:30 at night, you want to make sure you're getting maximum exposure to the sun or to any light. And you don't want to be on the dark side of a hill. So it's always, when I look at land or a lot or a house, it's usually the first thing I look at is the location as far as the sun. Is it in a sunny location? To me, especially people moving from the prairies, one of my good friends is out there right now working in Calgary. And he cannot believe the amount of sunshine. He sent me a tweet the other day that he had a sunburn from chopping wood outside. It was so sunny. The snow was on the ground, and the sun is just so intense. I mean, when you're from the coast, he was just not used to it. So that's why you want to make sure that you buy a lot with the maximum amount of sunshine, so that in the winter, when the days are short, you're getting maximum sunshine on the lot. So it's not necessarily the size of the lot that's the primary importance. It's the location of it and the angle of it. Is it on the north side of a hill? Is it, you know, tucked into a valley on the north side of a big hill? And trust me, lots of Salt Spring is on the north side of a hill. There are places that you can go in the wintertime and see virtually no sunshine, which really is not a good position to be in. It's not somewhere where you want to live. people will tend not to want to live in those houses in the wintertime on Salt Spring. The resale value will also be down on those houses. So that's why, again, southerly exposure is prime. So now we narrowed it down that you want a maybe a privacy buffer. You want southern exposure. The other thing I'd like to talk about is when you're buying rural real estate is people always think it's so funny when I say this. And they go, are you kidding me? You know, we live in Edmonton. We're used to like an hour commute to everywhere. But once you've lived here for a long time or quite a while, you realize that so much on Salt Spring happens in town. You know, all of the restaurants, all of the coffee shops, most meetings that you go to all happen in town. Most club activities are in town. So many things happen in Ganges that if you live, you know, on the far side of the island or way, way far away from town, you're going to end up spending a lot of time driving back and forth, back and forth. And again, it's one of those things where at first it may not seem like much, but after a while, it's like, holy doodle. You know, I've put on 20,000 kilometers on Salt Spring driving back and forth on the same road four times a day. And it gets very thin. A lot of the resales that happen on Salt Spring, people that live here that sell and move again on the island, they want to move close to town. It's probably the number one thing I always hear. I want to live close to town. I'm tired of being at the Southey Point or, you know, Isabella Point. I mean, they want to live usually within about, you know, 5 kilometers, 6 kilometer radius of Ganges, which is really nice. It's nice to be even within walking distance of town or cycling distance in town. It's just that, you know, it's nice to be outside walking. I went for a nice walk this morning, and it would be nice to be able to walk into town and get a coffee and walk home. And so that's something that you should really think about is the proximity to town. So these are some of the things that when you're thinking about Salt Spring, most people don't think about. So when we look at the lot, we want a southern exposure. We want a fairly close proximity to town. You might want to think about a privacy buffer, the shape of the lot. Is it long and narrow? Did the developer just leave it, really narrow lot so they could get as many in as possible with as few roads as possible? I mean, are you actually, even though you have 5 acres, are you going to get any privacy? And so, again, that's something that you have to look at is the privacy of the lot. Not all lots are created the same. And that's where, when you're thinking about buying on Salt Spring, you know, you have your price range that you're looking at, and you see all the houses on the MLS, and you click on them and look on them, and you kind of get, oh, okay, here's one. It's on what, you know, a road, just pick a road, any road, let's say Lang's Road. And you go, well, what's that like? And that's why I have my interactive map on my new website, escapetosaltspring.ca. On my interactive map, there's about 100 videos of the island. Now, the videos are not the highest quality videos, but what they are I try to drive down every road on the island and shoot the road from, you know, shoot a video of all the houses and the whole streetscape, what it's like, you know, the topography of it. It gives you an idea. I mean, when you buy real estate, you're really buying into a neighborhood, just like in the city where you're buying into that big development track. Here, you're buying into a neighborhood. Now, the best analogy I've ever heard about real estate and the neighborhood that you're buying into, you know how a swimming pool has those ropes in it, the line ropes that make people swim up and down the lines, and they have those little floats on it? Well, pretend those little floats are houses. And the rope binds them all together. And now let's say one house is really bad on the street and you go by and there's junk cars out front and it's just terrible looking and there's no upkeep and it's just falling down and there's loud noise constantly coming out of it and there's chickens on the front yard and I mean it's just horrid, horrid, horrid. Then what that does is it's if someone grabbed one of those floats and pushed it down inside the pool. And what happens when someone pushes down on one of those floats? all the other floats that are close by it, they get dragged down under the water too, because they're all linked together. And that's what real estate is like. So it's important that, you know, you look at this house and you say, okay, you found a nice house at $550,000, right in your price range, and it's got a sunny lot, it's got some privacy. And then you look at the streetscape on my interactive map, and you see the house on the video, and then you look down two houses, and there's this really crummy place, and you look across the street, and there's another really crummy place. What happens is, no matter what you do, you know, if you took one of those floats in a pool and you grab onto one of them and you try to pull them out of the water, you can only pull up so high, because you, as you pull yours up, you're pulling the other ones out of the water too. And you can only pull it so high. So you can't say, well, I'll go in and fix up my house and make it so much better. You're attached to that neighborhood. So if you're buying a $550,000 house, and all the other houses in the area are really, really crummy, worth like $200,000-$300,000, there's no way that you can buy that house, fix it up maybe a little bit more, and resell it for more money, because you're pushing the neighborhood, you're pushing the street, and you can't do that. In real estate, what you want to do is you want to find that $550,000 house on a street where all the other houses are maybe $950,000 or $1 million plus. And maybe they're all waterfront on the other side of the street, and the 550 house is across the street, non-waterfront, but with a view. That's a good position to be in. You want to buy, it's an oldest thing in real estate, one of the oldest dictums, the worst house on the absolute best street. So if you can find that scenario, you know, you're laughing, because no matter what you do, even if you just paint the place, you're going to make money. It's going to go up in value. Where if you buy the absolute best house on the worst street, no matter what you do, you're just going to continuously lose money. You'll never be able to sell it. Your price will probably come down. Even if the market goes up, the price of that house will probably not go up. And you'll just be buried in it for a long time. So that's why you want to find, you know, it's not just looking at the house on the MLS and saying, okay, this is the house I like. You actually have to take a look at what's beside it, what's across the street from it, what's down the road from it, what location on the island is it on. And that's why a local realtor like myself, or one of the other 30 realtors on the island, we have that knowledge of what the neighborhood's like. And that's the kind of knowledge that you have to have. So anyways, that's how... another thing that you have to think about is it the best house in the neighborhood, or is it just an average house, or is it the absolute worst house that if you just fix it up a little bit, it could be stunning? So these are some of the things you have to look at when you buy. So now we've got the size of the house, the requirements that you need, the price range that you have, the sunny location, the kind of average to not the worst house, but not the average house on the best street. That's the house that you want to zero in on. Now, there's a couple other things that you're going to need to know before you put in an offer on that house. And one of the most important things, you know, I was reading a book over Christmas called The Technical Analysis, and it actually went into who Dow was. And Dow was the guy, Dow Jones Industrial Average, that he came up with a theory, the Dow Theory. And, you know, when you look at the Dow Theory, part of that is, it's basically a supply and demand theory. It's nothing really revolutionary. If all of a sudden, part of the Dow theory is you have to find out how long something's been for sale, and it's like a house. How long has it been on the market for? It's a very important question. How long? So the house is $550,000 asking price. Well, how long has it been on the market? Sounds simple enough. It's been on, it says, I phoned the listing agent, he told me it was listed 45 days ago, so it's been on the market 45 days. But is that it? Really, only 45 days. Has it been listed before and not sold? See, these are the questions that you have to ask. And that's where the Victoria Real Estate Board does not have aggregate days on the market. A lot of the U.S. real estate boards have what's called aggregate days on the market. If a house is owned by somebody and they put it on the MLS, it'll start the meter ticking. If the listing expires, they list with another agent, it's the meter still keeps ticking. So all of a sudden, if the house has been on the market for 2 years, it's going to show it's been on the market for 2 years. On the Victoria Real Estate Board, if a house, if the listing expires, or if it's canceled and relisted, it'll show as a new listing. So you can have a house that was just one relisted the other day. It was on the market for 645 days. The listing was canceled or it expired, came up as a new listing the next day with 0 days on the market. So you really need to know what the aggregate days on the market. So how long has it been for sale? So we know the price is $550. Now we know it's been on the market for 2 years instead of just 45 days because we found out what the aggregate days on the market is. Now the other thing that I always like to know when I'm buying a house is I like to know how much the sellers paid for it. I mean, it may be irrelevant, but I still like to know. I mean, if they paid $720,000 for the house, and right now they're asking $550,000, that's really relevant information. That means that they're taking a huge loss on the house, and they're underwater, and they're selling it, you know, at below what they paid. Now, if the other thing I like to find out personally, if I'm buying, is how much is owed on the house. Mortgage documents are public information. I have a video about how I pull the mortgage documents on any house in British Columbia. Just go down to the service counter, you pull the title, and if there's a mortgage registered on the title, it'll have a number, and you ask for the mortgage documents, and they'll give them to you. To get a title and mortgage documents on a property, it costs about $28. So now all of a sudden, we know, okay, we found the house. We know it's $550,000. We know they paid $720,000. Oh, but guess what? They owe $520,000 on the house. And they also have real estate fees on top of that, probably another $20,000. So if we offer them below $540,000, they may not be able to clear. So it's something that, you know, the chances are you're going to be right on the razor's edge there. And, you know, some people, I've had some deals where they can't close. And we're seeing more and more of this where houses are actually underwater and they owe more than, or it could be in, you know, we'll find out too, maybe it's in foreclosure. In Canada, foreclosures are not, they're not, you know, they don't wave a big flag. The house is in foreclosure. It's in foreclosure. There's no, most agents and most banks do not, and they don't want the real estate agents to actually tell anybody the house is in foreclosure. And so it's not really advertised as a foreclosure, because the thing is, people think they're going to get this incredible deal if it's a foreclosure. And the banks aren't stupid. They're not going to give it away. They're going to sell it at assessed price, or what they think the market assessed price is. And so you just won't get an incredible deal. And they don't want people coming in with just lowball offers trying to get it for nothing. So basically, that's some of the things that we have to do to buy a house on Salt Spring Island. We have to find the price range you're looking at. We have to find out what size house you want. We have to find a sunny location, in my opinion, is an important thing. We have to find out if privacy, if you want a private lot. So we want a south-facing private lot. And then we have to find out something about the sellers once you find the actual house. And then formulate an offer where you're going to go with an offer on that house. If they're asking $550,000, you know, where are you going to go in with your offer? What are you prepared to pay for that house? That's something you have to ask yourself. At a certain price point, it's worth it to buy it. But are you going to go, if all of a sudden you get into a bidding war on that house, will you pay $570,000 for the house? Will you like it at $570,000? And that's something that you have to determine up front. It's like a stock, you know, if you're selling stocks, you've got your stop loss when you sell, you know, if it drops down to a certain price, drops down 10%, you're going to be out. I mean, it's the same thing when you buy. Are you prepared to actually pay more? What are you prepared to pay? And you want to figure that out before you write the offer. a lot of people get caught up in the emotion of it all, and they it just takes over, and they end up paying thousands more than they have to. So that ends the first part of our Radio Real Estate show. We're going to be back in a little bit with the market snapshots for the 2011 market. Find out how the Salt Spring real estate market fared in 2011. So stay tuned. I'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.